zest of life has vanished. Only the skeleton remains unexpectedly vile. I used to be better, I used to be better, I used to be better.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. I used to be better. Lyrics for an aristocrat lifted from the pages of Leo Tolstoy's classic War and Peace and dropped into a whirlwind of electropop cabaret in the Broadway musical Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812. It's hot right now. 12 Tony nominations, the biggest haul of the season. A meandering 19th century tale of Russian sadness and betrayal going big on Broadway. Superstar Josh Groban singing the lead. Hamilton's got competition from history. This hour On Point, Tolstoy's War and Peace does Broadway in the new musical Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did you see the Great Comet of 1812 off-Broadway, on-Broadway? Do you get why it's swept the Tony nominations? And does a tale of decadent aristocrats partying while a war rages offstage, of innocence and corruption, resonate with you today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we'll speak to the hero and heroine of the play, Josh Groban, and Danae Benton. But first, I'm joined from New York by David Malloy and Rachel Chapkin. David Malloy is the creator, composer, lyricist, orchestrator of Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812. He performed the role of Pierre in earlier production, and he's playing Pierre again today, standing in for the show's current Pierre, Josh Groban. He's got 3 of the Tony nominations, Best Orchestration, Best Book of a Musical, and Best Original Score. Rachel Chapkin is getting rave reviews for her direction of the musical and was nominated by the Tonys for Best Direction of a Musical. Rachel, David, congratulations and welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much. Happy
Hello.
To be here.
Thank
Hi.
You.
Congrats. It's something else to take this from very early on and come to the point that it's standing at now. David, can you take us back to these 70 pages out of War and Peace? How did they end up at the heart of a Broadway musical?
Sure. Yeah, I read the book about, God, I guess it's like 8 years ago now. And when I got to this section happens right in the center of the novel. And it's a critical turning point for the novel's 2 main protagonists, Pierre and Natasha. Mm-hmm. And truly, when I read this particular 70-page section of the book, I was just so swept away by it. And when I read the last paragraph of it, which is the paragraph where Pierre is seeing the comet in the night sky after just having this epiphany, tears were just streaming down my face, and I had just this real epiphany, like, oh my God, I just read a perfect musical. Like, a perfect musical has been, you know, perfectly wrapped and bow-tied by Tolstoy for me. And I remember Googling immediately to, like, see if someone else had done that already, because I thought, surely someone has already made this into a thing, but no one had.
Rachel, introduce us, if you'd be kind enough, to Pierre and to Natasha, these 2 characters. We'll hear from the singers who play them later, but introduce us.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, this section is right from the center of the book. So Natasha, by this point, I think is around 19, and she is an aristocrat from actually a bankrupt family. She is engaged to a man named Andrei Bolkonsky, who, in our telling, is off at war.
Mm-hmm.
And her family had lost all their money in a poker game, and she's both desperately, desperately in love with Andre, who happens to also be Pierre's best friend. Also, it's a good marriage because Andre's family is very wealthy, so there's a lot riding on this. And Natasha is very, very arrogant and charming. The first time you ever meet her in Tolstoy's novel, she's tackling a boy in the atrium and kissing him behind the flowers. So she's this kind of brash young woman, and she goes to the opera one night, and there in Moscow meets a rake named Anatole, and he ends up stealing her heart and sort of shattering a lot of things in the process. And then Pierre is also an aristocrat, one of the wealthiest men in Russia, and basically is rotting in his study. He's in a very unhappy marriage. He's an alcoholic and is kind of wildly depressed and alienated from society. And over the course of the story, their two paths intersect sort of around this engagement and the melodrama of it.
Of course, it's a Russian novel, so it's complicated, as we are warned in the prologue here. Here's a little bit from Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812.
Раз, два, три!
And this is all in your program. You are at the opera. Gonna have to study up a little bit if you want to keep with the plot. Because it's a complicated Russian novel. Everyone's got nine different names. So look it up in your program. We'd appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. Natasha!
Warned right away, it's a complicated Russian novel, so keep up. And the staging, Rachel, is like something that many Broadway goers may never have seen before. Describe to us exactly how you've remade the Imperial Theater, not the first home of this show, but the Imperial Theater for The Great Comet.
Sure. From 87 seats to 1,100 seats now on Broadway. So the audience walks into, well, first I should say, coming off the street, they walk into what Mimi Lien, our set designer, calls the bunker, which is sort of designed as a Cold War era Soviet punk. It's poured concrete, and there's music posters in Cyrillic and signs, cryptic signs, warning about some strobe lights they might encounter.
Yeah.
And often a lot of our audiences actually think that the lobby is just under construction. but a huge,
starts off
part
grim
of
bunker,
that.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then the whole reason that is the case is then they enter this theater, and I think Mimi once described it as like being inside a Fabergé egg. The whole interior of the Imperial is covered in red velvet curtains that are slathered with pictures and paintings. I think there's over 600 paintings now on the walls with individual lights on them, and each painting was very deliberately chosen by Mimi and Noah Meese, our props designer. Mm-hmm. And there's pictures of Napoleon and Tolstoy and Russian landscapes, but there's also a picture of Pussy Riot buried
right
on the wall. And so there's a sort of a distinct, though subtle, feeling of anachronism that's around the space. And there's brass railings. It's very opulent. And everywhere are hung chandeliers that were inspired by the chandeliers at the Met Opera, kind of Sputnik chandeliers.
Mm-hmm.
And those are covered with crystal. And, of course, the biggest thing is that we have about a third of our audience on stage. So the whole space is this kind of like bowl of red velvet.
And the actors all through the audience, and including the audience on stage. Dave Malloy, this is kind of a cabaret setting with people right in the thick, almost theater in the round.
Absolutely, yeah. So the actors are running all around. There are Mimi has built stairways that go from the stage up into the mezz. So the actors are running through the mezz as well. And we have musicians running around as well. One of the big influences for the piece was this club that I went to in Moscow many years ago called Cafe Margarita. And it was just this packed club. And I ended up sitting right next to the viola player. There was a viola, piano, and violin trio playing. And I had such an amazing experience sitting next to this viola player that I was like, oh, what a cool experience to have like this intimate one-on-one relationship with a musician, you know, that's part of a larger ensemble. So to kind of give that experience to the audience, we have our pit musicians are scattered all around the space. So there's a string tavern in the middle, and then there's, you know, oboe on one side of the stage, clarinet on the other side. And then we also have seven actor musicians who run around the space playing accordion and clarinet and violin and viola. So they kind of are speeding past you playing little parts of the music at all times.
What was it in those 70 pages of Tolstoy that grabbed you, Dave, that you thought people will swoon for this? I mean, historical musicals, they've been around, and Hamilton made them very big again. But you, even before Hamilton was on stage, you were immersed in this. What was the theme, the feeling, the message, the resonance across time that made you say, that will resonate now? What is it?
I mean, it was definitely, for me, it was the character of Pierre. And just, I related to that character of Pierre so strongly as being someone, and I think so many people feel this today, certainly, of just feeling really alienated by society and not feeling that you can, you know, successfully be a part of society, just like not knowing how to act, not knowing how to speak to people. And at the same time, like having a really huge heart and like wanting so much to be able to speak to people and to love people, but just not knowing quite how to engage and feeling like society is very shallow and false and that you're kind of caught in this chaotic world and searching for meaning in that. So Pierre is constantly in the novel searching for meaning in philosophy and religion and spirituality. And that searching was the thing. I read this book when I was going through the same thing myself. I mean, I think I'm still going through that thing myself. But it was very much that kind of dissonance of what was going on for him inside versus what was going on in society around him. And that is something I feel like today is something certainly most people I know are feeling.
Rachel, you're directing this. What do you feel people connecting with in The Great Comet?
Yeah, I mean, you said it in part, which is the very first lines of the piece are, there's a war going on out there somewhere. So this feeling of this massive global conflict happening beyond the doors, which certainly the bunker is, the lobby design is a gesture towards, and the selfishness inside. And Pierre, at a certain point late in the show, when he's yelling at Anatole, says, after all, you must understand that besides your pleasure, there is such a thing as other people and their happiness and peace. And I just find that line so painful. And I know the day after the election, it nearly broke my chest open just thinking about selfishness and generosity. And I think in particular, Pierre and Natasha's best friend, Sonia, perform these incredible acts of bravery and selflessness to help someone they love.
Rachel Chapkin, hold a thought. We've got to go out for just a second. We'll come right back to it. Dave Malloy, we're talking about Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. 12 Tony nominations, more than any other. You can join us. Have you seen the show? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What's coming across the years from Tolstoy here? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
And your childlike eyes and your distant smile, I'll never be this happy again, you and I. And no one else.
He moved with a swagger which would have been ridiculous had he not been so good looking.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Tolstoy's War and Peace on Broadway. In the musical with the most Tony nominations this year, 12, Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812. A musical slice of Tolstoy, old Moscow, weary aristocrats, and war that resonates right now. Dave Malloy is with us, creator of the musical. Rachel Chavkin, getting rave reviews for her direction of The Great Comet, with us as well from New York. We will hear in just a few minutes from superstar Josh Groban and Danae Benton. They play the leads on Broadway right now. You can join us in this hour. Are you ready for a slice of Tolstoy gone techno, electro pop, played right in your lap in this staging? And does a story of innocence dropped into decadence always pull at your heartstrings? Do the old, out-of-touch Moscow aristocrats here resonate today? The 1% or 0001% cut off and self-involved? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. David Malloy, Dave Malloy, and Rachel Chapkin with us from New York. Ashley is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Ashley, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know?
Well, I just wanted to call in because I've seen this play several times. I have tickets to see it again in June. I'm very excited to see Oak Onodoen's take on Pierre. And also, Dave, congrats to you on your Broadway debut last night. That's wonderful news.
Thank you so much.
You did so good.
Standing in last night is Pierre. Fantastic.
Yes, yes. Reprising the role from the Ars Nova production. So I'm obviously a pretty big fan of the show, and I just wanted to call and say that originally, you know, I wanted to see this show because I wanted to get inside that theater because it seemed like a truly incredible and unique thing. And then once I was there and I saw how different it was and I realized how much fun it was by intermission, I knew I'd be back. And then when the abduction was performed, which is a song in the second act of the play, I knew that that was it. I was an addict. I was going to be back in that theater as many times as I could possibly be.
And Ashley from Knoxville, sounds like you've done exactly that. We've got callers from all over the place. Thank you, Ashley. Sasha in Charlotte, North Carolina. Sasha, you're on.
Hi, Tom and guests. I had the opportunity to see The Great Comet a few weeks ago and was just blown away on the experience and the interactiveness. And what really stayed with me is that, you know, there are parts of it that are so overwhelming to your senses. And then at the end, it's just so quiet. And it makes the profoundness of it really stay with you. So just wanted to say thank you to everyone who made it possible. And also, while I am a huge fan of Josh Groban, I cannot wait to see Oak from Hamilton take over the role over the summer.
Yes, we've got this change coming up, the sort of intermingling here suddenly of Hamilton and The Great Comet. Can you describe for us, Dave, how this went from the mind to reality? It's kind of an incredible arc to most people, and how it started out at the scale it started out and then just went from one venue to another to this point. How did that happen?
God, I wish I knew. It seems like such a miracle to me. I mean, the way it happened is I was blessed to be surrounded by incredible collaborators, incredible geniuses who kind of took the tiniest kernels of what I had. So I said, you know, I want to make this electropop opera based on Tolstoy, and I want to set it in kind of a Russian tavern where there's no division between the audience and the performers. And that's kind of all I said. And from there, Mimi Leanne and Rachel, you know, their task was then to figure that out. And like, what does that show look like in terms of like how, where is the audience and where are the performers? And Mimi created these, you know, in our first version in 87 seats, she created these beautiful kind of curved bars that all the action happened on. So, and then in front of the bars were banquettes that the audience was seated on. So the action would be happening, you know, behind your head and in front of you and to the left and to the right. And that 87 seat version, like we've really kept that essential DNA intact as we've scaled the piece up first to 200 seats and then to about 500 seats and now to about 1,100 seats. So every time we've just kind of broadened that basic concept, but the Ars Nova show is still the essential kernel of the show. And all of our designers have just kind of made that version more and more opulent and more and more Tolstoy, more and more epic. And, you know, it's always going back to this epic novel that Tolstoy wrote.
The Ars Nova beginning very small, then to the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and now at the Imperial. How does it change the experience for you as a director working with these different venues, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing is I think for both us on the creative team and honestly for the audience members who had been, you know, part of the few who had gotten to see the show originally at Ars Nova, this tiny, wonderful space, there was this great fear that we would lose the intimacy. And the fact there is no fourth wall, that the actors sing directly to the audience. We call it sort of a dear diary.
Practically in their laps, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And a huge part of that, it's not like we set out for just creative sake to make an immersive show. It really was about trying to recreate that intimacy that you feel when you're reading a novel, and particularly this novel, because Tolstoy is so detailed with the portrayal of life and all of its nuances and the humor and the decadence. So maintaining that one-on-one relationship between performers and audience was key. And so there was the great fear of losing it as we got larger. But the funny thing has been, every time it's gotten bigger, it actually has felt like it's become more the thing it always wanted to be. In part because, as Dave said, it's Tolstoy. So it really is everything.
Make
it's war and peace.
Make it large.
So not afraid of size.
Let's dive right in with a couple of the lead actors right at the heart of this. With us right now, I'm very happy to have them. Josh Groban and Danae Benton. Josh Groban plays Pierre. It's his first time. This is a huge selling recording artist, more than 25 million records worldwide. Super famous, and now on Broadway for the first time. Danae Benton getting rave reviews for her portrayal of Natasha in The Great Comet of 1812. Danae Benton is with us right now from New York. Danae, thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And from Los Angeles, Josh Groban joins us. Josh, welcome to the show. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Josh, you've done so much in the public eye, but never Broadway before. Why this show, and what's the experience been like?
Every bit of it has been an absolute dream, an incredible learning experience, obviously, being able to work under Rachel's direction and with Dave's masterpiece here of a score. It's been as challenging as it has been rewarding. It's been the best possible experience. And this was my original dream. This was something that I've, you know, wanted to take on in, as far as live theater and musical theater since I was very young. And so I've hit some forks in the road in my career. They've all been wonderful. But to kind of full circle and come back around here to the world of Broadway, and to do so in this fashion with this kind of piece and with the creative forces that are around this piece has just been humbling and just so wonderful.
Danae Benton, what's it like to play Natasha here in a setting out of fairly deep history, a world away and a deep time away from where we stand right now, and to play a down-on-her-luck but nevertheless beautiful young Russian aristocrat? What's that been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, these are the roles that I've always sort of dreamed of playing, these kind of epic ingenue roles. And I think that you think of the great ones like Fanny Bryce and Evita and these heart-wrenching stories of women really growing into themselves. And Dave wrote an incredible one. And so for me, there was always this dream of getting to be this girl in the corset with all the drama, but not necessarily knowing if those opportunities would be afforded to me. So it's been a great kind of testimony to what can happen when you really bring your essence to something. And this role has demanded everything that I have to give emotionally and physically and spiritually. It's an incredibly demanding role, but it's also so rewarding because it's sort of proved to me what can be possible.
Let's listen to the sound of the two of you. This is from the show, Pierre and Natasha, Josh Groban and Danae Benton singing here. Her engagement to Pierre's best friend, the Prince André, is in real trouble here. Pierre's been angry with her for betraying, he thinks, his friend, and here he finds his heart softening in pity. From The Great Comet, Pierre and Natasha.
Prince Volkonsky was your friend. He is your friend. He once told me that I should turn to you.
Pierre sniffed as he looked at her, but he didn't speak. Till then he had reproached her, tried to despise her, but now he felt such pity for her. There was no room in his soul for reproach.
Here now. Tell him to forgive me.
Josh Groban and Danae Benton singing there from The Great Comet of 1812. They join us right now. Calls for the two of you. Mitch in Woodstock, Vermont. Mitch, you're on with a whole lot of the cast of this great show. What do you think, Mitch?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if, hi Danae also,
hi.
I was wondering if you guys could chat about representation in theater and what the casting process has been like for you guys from the beginning, and how important it's been to you guys to show kind of the very colors and faces of humanity in this production.
May I take it to Rachel first? I mean, Rachel, you've cast a multi-racial cast here. Danae playing Natasha's African-American, wonderful, but in some ways new ground for a Broadway that, before Hamilton and others, has been pretty stuck in old channels of racial depiction, representation, as Mitch asked. How did you make this decision?
Sure. I mean, it's. I think first and foremost, it's just diversity is a core value of mine and Dave's, I think, and so it was always something that we were just committed to, and it wasn't even really a discussion beyond that. You know, I think part of it is related to Tolstoy, again, the fact that it's War and Peace and that we wanted to create a culture that was all-inclusive. I mean, the other thing that we've done is cast almost 1,200 people in the show along with our cast, which is all our extras, i.e. the audience. And so that we wanted a truly and thoroughly diverse cast was sort of unquestionable, that we wanted a diversity of types and spirits. I mean, I think the show, one of the things that's so remarkable about it is how unique everyone's voice is. If you look at Britton Ashford, who plays Sonia, who is a folk singer, to Gelsey Bell and Paul Pinto, who play Princess Mary and Balaga, who are experimental opera singers. And then, of course, Danae and Josh with these exquisite, more classical pipes, like that everyone, that there's a feeling of authenticity and individuality to each person is a deep root level part of the culture that we wanted to build in that space. That for me is like utopia, is an assemblance of all of these beautiful freaks.
We are in the thick of Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812. I mean, Danae, how is it for you? Rachel says this is just natural, just something she wanted to do. But as an African-American singer and actress, you must be well aware that very often a role like this historically would not have been available to you. And now here it is, and you've taken it and run with it. How's it feel?
Oh, I mean, 100%. The audition process, there was a lot of fear. I remember saying to my agent, I was like, I'm not sure they're looking for me. Are you sure about this? I wanted it, and I heard this song, No One Else, and my soul immediately understood Natasha's essence. And I think my viewpoint on roles like this, like Natasha, like Pierre, when you're dealing with these great, epic, sort of archetypal story arcs, you know, it's like Pierre is a man with an existential crisis. Natasha is becoming a woman and dealing with choices of love and loss. And so to me, when you're casting the sort of every man or the every woman or the every girl, you've got to look at every person. And I think that that just makes the humanity run deeper. You know, I think that Hollywood and theater in our country and our history of exclusion and systematic racism, it's like there is a history of deciding that the every man should look like one thing. And so stories like this come along and it shows that no, the every man really looks like everyone. And I think it makes it far more palpable. I think that our job and our great gift in theater is that we get to challenge people's minds to see the truth in one another. And so I'm excited that this production took on that responsibility head on. And it's incredible what happens in the minds of our audience members, I think.
Josh, what themes resonate most deeply for you? When you're up there in this incredible set with Danae and the enormous cast, what are the messages that you feel yourself channeling to this audience that feel most resonant today?
Well, it's an amazing thing, especially in the world we live in today, to be part of something that, theater does this in the most spectacular way, is that as well as being a bit of escapism for people, that it sometimes can tell a story of a universal feeling that we all have, or something that we're all dwelling about in the world, or feeling within ourselves, can shine a light on that through this story that was written so many years ago that we're now bringing to life in this, you know, this insane and wonderful production. But for me, I think the thing that's most poignant, and somebody who called in kind of touched on it in that final moment in the show where there is this chaos, there is this fear, there's this worry, there's these love triangles, and then all of a sudden there's this silence and there's this quiet and there's this feeling of wanting to find simplicity and wanting to get off the treadmill of stuff and find meaning in the world, and find meaning in what you want in the world and in your life. And for me, even though there are some things that I don't resonate with Pierre in my personal life, there are very many things that I think are similar and relevant to all of us in these characters of this beautiful story. And so I've done almost 200 of these now, and without fail, I get choked up, and I get that feeling, and it's an incredible thing.
Joss Groban plays Pierre in Natasha, Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. Danae Benton plays Natasha. What a treat to have the two of you with us. Joss Groban, thanks very much for joining us from Los Angeles.
Thank you, Tom.
And Danae Benton in New York, thank you very much, and good luck, Danae.
Thanks so much.
Dave Malloy, Rachel Chapkin, creator, director, please stand by. 12 Tony nominations for The Great Comet. Listeners, you can join us. Have you seen it? What do you hear? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Just don't care. Nothing's left. I've looked everywhere. Is this how I die? Was there ever any other way my life could be? Is this how I die? Such a storm of feelings inside of me.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron partners with sustainable farms, fisheries, and ranchers to bring you everything you need to create incredible home-cooked meals. Ingredients come pre-measured, so there's no food waste, and it's delivered right to your door. Rediscover how fun cooking can be while enjoying seasonally inspired recipes and exploring new flavors and cuisines. No commitment. Get the meals only when you want. Get your first three Blue Apron meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com/OP.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about a slice of Tolstoy's War and Peace on Broadway. On Broadway, in a big way, the musical Natasha, Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. 12 Tony nominations this week, top of the heap in terms of the number of Tony nominations, for this musical set in Tolstoy's time, all the way back at the time when French invasion of Russia was threatening Moscow. You've got aristocrats far from the front. Innocence and decadence and ennui and depression. Dave Malloy created the show. He's with us this hour from New York. Rachel Chapkin directs it. And both are looking at Tony nominations right now. We just heard from Josh Groban, superstar, and Danae Benton, who plays Natasha in the show. You can join us this hour, 800-423-8255. What do you think? Is the Broadway musical back on top, able to tell complex stories compellingly between Hamilton and the Great Comet? Is Broadway making history come alive again? 800-423-TALK is our number. The song Charming behind us right there. And Haley calling from Boston. Hi, Haley, or somewhere near Boston. Haley, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dave. Hi, Rachel.
What's going on, Haley?
I'm on a bus on my way to New York to see the show for my seventh time tonight.
Oh, my God.
I'm so excited. Oh, I have a question for Dave. Last night was your big Broadway debut, playing Pierre for the first time on Broadway. What was it like coming back to this role, and like, how excited are you for this, for your 10 performance run? Like, my God, I bet the energy was incredible last night.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the most sublime experiences of my life. I can still kind of barely believe it actually happened. And for me, like, what was so incredible about last night is, you know, so this show, we started the show at Ars Nova 5 years ago, and some of the people that were in that original production are still with the show today. So, like, over these 5 years, you know, Rachel and I have this family has grown around us, and this family now contains, you know, most of my, like, dearest and closest friends in the world. And so as I was performing, you know, this role of Pierre, this guy who's like really has a hard time connecting with society and is going through this existential life crisis, but eventually at the end of the show, like, finds connection and finds a way to move forward in the world, like, through kindness towards other people, which is like Tolstoy's big message ultimately. so I was, you know, playing that character. And at the same time, there's this meta layer of I'm Dave Malloy, you know, surrounded by all these people. And, you know, I still have, you know, social anxiety and awkwardness. And yet I have this incredible community of people surrounding me and supporting me and shining too. There was an amazing moment last night, actually an amazing character moment for me, Rachel. And it was like a discovery of watching the song Charming and, you know, Helene for Pierre and Helene have this horrible marriage. And it's this very shallow marriage, and you know, Helene has just kind of married him because of his he's gotten this huge inheritance, and so Helene has kind of suckered him into getting married to him, and Pierre goes with it because Helene is just very sexy, and Pierre's like, oh, maybe this will be a fun thing. And I had this moment of watching our incredible actress Amber Gray perform the song Charming last night, and of you know, being disgusted with her because she's like Helene and she's this awful person, but also having this moment of like being dazzled by her and like letting Pierre be dazzled by her and letting Pierre go like, yes, oh, you know what, even if she is an evil person or has, or not an evil person, but has these some poor choices in her life and some poor morals, like she is, there is something dazzling about her because she's human, because she is life. And so like recognizing that beauty in life, it was a really cool character moment for me. And then, yeah, then by the time I got to the end of the show and like seeing the Great Comet, like for me, the Great Comet is this community of people. Like it is, you know, I was seeing each individual actor and designer and crew member's face in the light bulb that is the comet. So it was a pretty sublime experience.
Rachel, what's it like directing the guy who you've worked with so much and who created this thing? Well, directing him on stage.
Yeah. I mean, actually, it's funny. I've been fortunate in my work to have gotten to collaborate with a number of musicians and people who I would categorize as performers more than actors specifically. Mm. And I love it because there's just a sense of presence and selfness that is brought. And Dave, you know, obviously the show streamed forth because he identifies so profoundly with Pierre. So in some ways that other actors I've now worked with on this piece, including Josh, you know, there was a big conversation about where Pierre's social anxiety lives, how his depression takes form, and the shyness. And with Dave, that sort of nugget of spirit was already in place. And so it really just became about where to stand and when to not use your hands too much.
I almost stood in all the right places, almost.
Let's hear just a little more. This is Letters, one of the most popular songs in the show. Pierre is writing to his closest friend, Prince Andrei, telling him he's decided to give his life meaning by assassinating Napoleon, whose armies are threatening Moscow. Meanwhile, Natasha is also writing to Prince Andrei to call off their engagement. Now she's smitten with Anatoly. Here you are, Letters.
None of us are great men. We're caught in the wave of history. Nothing matters. Everything matters. It's all the same. Oh, if only I could not see it. This dreadful, terrible it.
In 19th century Russia, we write letters. We write letters.
We write letters.
We put down in writing what is happening in our minds.
Dear Andre, after all that has happened, what am I to do if I love him and the other one too? Must I break it off? These terrible questions.
There are letters from Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 with the kind of Greek chorus there, you know, it's 19th century Russia. We write letters, we write down, and we put down in writing what is happening in our minds. Making it very explicit for you there. Donna in Dayton, Ohio. Donna, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Dave Malloy and Rachel Chefkin.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I saw the show in New York in March, and it was absolutely amazing. The whole thing was more than I could have even imagined. I went online to look at the premise of the show before I went there because I was just told it was like one of the hot new shows to see, and so why don't you go see it?
Yep.
And I had the opportunity. And I had never read War and Peace, so I was a little skeptical. And I ended up being amazed by everything in it, the human story. It was very human. Everything was very human. I noticed, for example, Natasha. She was just like pretty much any 19-year-old girl that you've ever met, kind of in it for herself in some ways, and she wants what she wants, that type of thing. But to be in the same room with all those amazing voices, to the music was just like right in front of you. It was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. I'm a huge theater geek. I see a lot of regional theater and performance art.
Donna, what's the message you took away from it, Donna? Or what's the theme that sticks with you?
For me, it was all about just being kind, being a human being. I really connected with the character Pierre, and it's partly because of my age, because I'm close to 65 years old. And it was just, you know, the song where he sings, I used to be better, I used to be better, I used to be better. There's so many times where you're just kind of like searching your mind and feeling like you should have learned more to be at your age, but you haven't. Because like that
cruel life.
Life.
Yeah.
But I just really connected with him and his sadness and his despondency at the way his life turned out, but also at the fact that he was kind of enamored and sort of in love with Natasha, and the kindness that he showed her when she was at a really low point in her life, because she kind of screwed herself by, you know, being unfaithful to
messing
Andre.
Around with
and
Natasha.
Right, exactly. And like I said, it was really just such a human story. Beautiful show, very intimate. The 1,100 seats sounds like a lot, but it's the way the whole place is set up. It's totally amazing. I've never seen anything like it. It was really, really wonderful.
Donna, you are good. You are good audience, and I'm sure Dave and Rachel would agree.
Yes, thank you so much.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Katie here writing to us on Twitter, traveled from Texas to see the show twice. Last month I saw Hamilton and Great Comet on the same day. And I got to say, Comet, says Katie in Texas. I imagine you'll take that. Is it, Rachel, do you see this show, and you've directed from day one here, is it more about the interior life of these characters? Is it more about social commentary? These aristocrats kind of cut off from the really rugged stuff out on the war front and having their private dramas in the, you know, fancy retreat.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm so delighted and moved by how Donna phrased it, because the space is so deliberately simple. I mean, it's funny because obviously it's very complicated in terms of the custom-built job.
Yes.
And the overwhelmingness of it. But at the end of the day, it's just some runways. You know, there's no troika. Mm-hmm. There's no sleigh. There's very little furniture of any kind or anywhere for the actors to hide. So that simplicity puts the emphasis entirely on the performers and the characters. And this goes to the question that you brought up. I mean, Tolstoy absolutely hated, and we heard it in that letters clip, the great man theory of history, the idea that history is one man's doing. And instead, he was interested in a people's history and all of the small parts that each of us individually play and the large picture that comes out of those microcosms of class and society. And I think that is political, right? That, you know, to say that it's not, we are not, none of us are great men. We are all just caught in the wave of history, and each of us has our role to play. I don't see a division necessarily between a character-driven story and the politics of it.
Of course, it was Napoleon driving the war at that time, but even so, Dave, what about, you've got aristocrats here, kind of the 0.0001% of the time, and now we're in a period where that's become a big deal. Is there resonance to that, to the inequality, to the sometimes disengagement or even unawareness of certain, you know, high floating parts of our society, to what you're depicting here a couple of centuries ago?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the most profound message that Tolstoy gives is that connection to other people is meaning. Like, that is the critical part of life. That's how we come together, and that's what gives our life a spiritual lift. And it feels like so much of the problem with you know, contemporary America, certainly, and the 1% is that kind of disconnect of not really recognizing other people in the world and not really empathizing with them and feeling that kind of compassion towards people. So I think in our show, we try to really show the joy and the spirituality that can come out of connection with human beings. And that comes, you know, both in a one-on-one moment, like with Natasha and Pierre just giving Natasha this moment of kindness. But it's also in the large group numbers. And it is in these, you know, these giant dance sections where everyone is just like ecstatically enjoying life together. And that's the audience and the performers all doing that together. And again, that goes back to the diverse casting as well, that we want to show kind of all of humanity celebrating together as one and doing things where they are thinking about other people. So yeah, that would be my hope. Mm. You know, when we sometimes, you know, there was this famous moment where Mike Pence came and saw Hamilton, yes, a few months ago, and, you know, Hamilton kind of delivered a message to him. And like, we have the same message. Like, I would hope that actually people from those echelons of our society could come into our show and see that, just recognize that, you know, humanity is more than just your tiny circle. Humanity is all of everyone in this theater, everyone in the world, and that we can all celebrate and love together if we are being compassionate and empathic towards each other.
It's not always joy. Natasha takes arsenic to end her life at some point, but survives here. Sonia frets and worries for her cousin and the whole mess she's in.
Natasha, very ill. The whole house, a state of alarm and commotion. Natasha, very ill, having poisoned herself with a bit of arsenic.
One more quick call. Adam in Manhattan. We've just got half a minute. Adam, you're on with Dave and Rachel.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking the call. Very briefly, I write for the theater, and I wanted to send a huge collegial hug to those guys for shepherding such an original piece, and to say from the other side of the desk that doing what they've done to achieve it and keep it intact as an utterly original thing is very, very difficult. I wrote a piece called Light in the Piazza and a couple other pieces, and it takes a lot of discipline on their part and a lot of belief in what they're doing. And it's a very beautiful piece, and we're all very lucky to have it, and I hope it has an extremely long life. So I just wanted to shout out from the other side of this profession.
The composer's shout out from Manhattan. Pretty good. Pretty good.
We'll take that.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Wow, what a ride. And 12 Tony nominations this week for Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812. Dave Malloy and Rachel Chapkin, there from the beginning. Dave as creator of the musical, Rachel as director, right from the start, both up for Tonys themselves now. How wonderful to get to talk with you and learn more about the show. Dave Malloy in New York, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And Rachel Chapkin, good luck with the show all the way through. Good luck.
Thank you.
We go out with the show's finale, The Great Comet of 1812. Pierre, still unhappily married, and cannot have his object of desire, Natasha. Natasha's dogged by scandal. But as the comet streaks across the sky, they each see a portent of sorts for happiness in each of their lives. Here's Pierre.
Stopped for me. It seems to that this comet feels me, feels my softened and uplifted soul, and my newly melted heart now blossoming. A new